Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for this 126th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is George Budagu Makoko. This is his third time being my guest on New Mainers Speak, October 2014 to talk about his book Ladder to the Moon, May 2015 to talk about culture shock, and today he's back in the studio to talk about the needs of immigrants in this political situation we find ourselves in today. George is originally from the high mountains of Mlenge in the southern Kivu province of Democratic Republic of Congo. He is a husband, a father of two, 4 and an 8-year-old, and is a senior property manager for Avesta Housing. Welcome back to New Mainers Speak, George.
Thank you, Kate, for having me again. Always happy to be here.
Yes, it's such a pleasure.
Indeed, yes.
So let's start with your name. I wondered if you could tell us about your name. Who named you, and what do your names mean?
That's interesting questions. Question. I was thinking about just when I grew up, I was called different name. My name they called me was Yorogo, and I grew up to not many people in my community were called Yorogo, and I always wonder why I was named Yorogo. And when I grew up, I realized that Yorogo was a fisherman from Greece who was fishing in Lake Tanganyika, and he was probably a successful businessman and who do the fishing. And that's, but when I started my school, I was named Budagu Makoko. And Budagu is the name of my grandpa, and Makoko is the name of my father. And Budagu, I don't think has any meaning, but it sounds like the way they call people from Germany in my language. But Makoko is, it means chieftain, or chieftain, someone who's a chief, and Makoko was one of the king in Congo Brazzaville. I researched around that. And George, which is now my name, it's a name that I named myself when, that sounds like Yorogo pretty much, or Yorogo. And so it means, George means someone who, a farmer, someone who walked the earth or who cultivated. So that's the meanings of my names.
And your parents had high hopes for you to be
a fabulous
businessman
and a chieftain. Yes. So it's good to know your names, the meaning of your names.
Yes,
and
I
every
love
time you're naming someone, you need to think about it before you name them, because it can be a sense of hope or it can be something discouraging if they don't have a good name.
Yes, yeah, some names are just names, and some really mean things,
means
too.
Something.
And so you get to carry that gift with you.
Yes.
Even if it's not your first choice.
That's right.
It means something.
Yeah, it means something, yeah.
Who, when you were a child, most influenced you to be aware of the needs of others?
I would say, I think my mother, but also the culture in my tribe. We grew up in a culture where we believe that nobody can make it by himself or herself. That you have to rely on the family first and then the community after the family. So there's a saying in my language that says that nobody can do by himself. So they say in Kinyamulenge that nta mugabo wigira. It means that you have to rely on the other people. So that's culture, and also my mother was very caring person and loving, and she always, I think, put other people's interests first, and I was so amazed by the courage she had and also the love over other people that I've seen in her life.
That community spirit can take the whole group far, can't it?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Yeah, and yeah. So different from here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Have you ever heard of a saying about pulling an elephant?
You know,
it's like when people come together, even something huge and bigger like elephant can be pulled. like, you know, can take it out from the one place to another. It means that you can move mountains when you come together, but whereby one person cannot do anything.
Yes,
and that spirit of togetherness and spirit of working together is something that was very rooted in my tradition, in my culture.
I think our idiom is many hands make light work.
That's right.
At what point would people in your family have guessed that you would grow up to serve and advocate for others?
I think at very early age. I remember where we grew up, we had some days that were market in different places. And market is where you could find so many things that you would, you know, if you were trying to get something in your, for like a school or clothes or shoe, you go to the market and you get it. I remember occasionally I'll go to a market if I need something for myself. I was, let's say I want to sell chicken and go in the market and then buy something that I want. Let's say shoe or school supplies. And every time I went to the market, and of course it was very fascinating to see so many things, new things and shining things in the market. And so I'll go around and buy something for myself. I never forget to buy something a little for my sister or my younger brothers. I always bring something home. And that's something that was done normally by the parents, because the parents, when they go into a market, they think about their kids. So when they're coming back, they can come with the candy or something for the kids. But when another young person goes in a market, normally they think about themselves. But I always remember about my younger siblings. And that's something. And I remember one day, that's even one of my names that was called Shimigwa, which means someone to be thankful. Hmm. And I think she has seen that character in me, that I'm not normally don't think about myself. I can also think about others at early age.
Yeah, it's your destiny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm.
You're thinking about the challenges that immigrants are facing as they integrate here into the mainstream life in Maine. And I wonder what kinds of things you notice when you're working with other immigrants about what they're needing.
There's so many things, and we can, of course, probably another 1 hour show.
Sure.
but if I can summarize the challenges that immigrants are facing right now in one thing, I can call it the low income is an issue. Like making low wages is an issue. It's a serious issue. And what I've seen, that just to offset that, you find that immigrants working one or two or three jobs just to be able to pay the bills. So, and that, of course, is due to the fact that there's so many other dynamics into that. Probably the language barrier that doesn't make them to compete to the higher paying jobs, and they also lack of information. There are also job trainings those are the things that are they really like dynamics into the one thing, like low wages is a serious problem. And I think it's rare to go in a family of immigrants and find both parents present in the weekend time, or like a Friday and Saturday, that's when one is working and the other one is home, and find both parents in the house. It's just something that rare. Or seeing immigrants taking vacation, just they work so very hard every time and trying to support their family here and family back home, because as we said, is they don't see themselves as individuals or one single family. They look themselves into a bigger picture of a bigger family, including cousins and aunties, and all of them become their responsibilities.
Sure. So, and they have this opportunity.
Yes,
which people may or may not understand that mm-hmm. they've left back home.
That's right.
You know, yeah. If they've seen a movie,
yes.
Then they know we have gilded streets.
Yeah.
Many immigrants have been through unimaginable strife before arriving safely here in the United States. They've been uprooted from their livelihoods and cultures and their loved ones, and they've lived through wars and other devastating abuses of power. What kinds of important services are currently offered to them to help them survive upon their arrival in Maine?
There are so many services, and I have to always think this way, that we always have to thank the American as a country, but there's communities, individuals who've been so helpful for the immigrant community. When they are coming here after surviving atrocities, like you said, the first thing they need is a housing. And if you're coming here as a refugee, you go to some of the agencies, resettlement agencies like a Catholic Charity is the one welcoming you and providing housing and clothing. And in the weather like this, you need a lot of clothes. And also the food, it's provided by DHHS, sometimes the food stamps. And also I think some of the cities will also provide vouchers that you can take to the grocery store and buy food. And also healthcare, of course, they need, if they get sick, they have to be treated. And I've seen that it's something that they've done, the host communities of the American have done a very good job. And I don't see anybody, every time they're here, they get help. But the only one thing that is different is for the asylees. And asylees, as you probably know, are the people who are here for visa, and then they have to seek the asylum or the protection while they're here. Those are the ones who have limited services, and they probably can't access the food stamp. They have some limitations as to what services they can access to. And those are the ones that are mostly helped by the other communities, the local communities, the immigrant communities themselves. So those are the services that are there, and I always encourage people to talk to people who've been here before, who've gone through the same process. They will be able to direct them to the right resources around. And that's something that I always think that immigrants should be vocal in thanking Americans for helping them to survive and getting also the sense of protection after you lose home and you're fearing being killed. When you're here, you need that sense of protection, feeling that now you're safe and you can live a new life again.
Yes, and it's such a different culture in some cases that, you know, you need someone to walk you through and show you how to turn the stove on and how the thermostat works in your house.
Definitely. There's a lot. They need the help in so many things. That's why you need somebody at your side who will show you how to navigate the system. It can be very challenging.
And you need to learn quickly because the support isn't there forever. It's there for a few months while you get up and running.
Exactly right.
Show you over to a job and you start working. And then.
And again, the other thing that mentioning that is that they also need to be aware that, like you say, they need to learn quickly and services that are there temporarily. And once they are gone, you have to stand by yourself. And that's something that awareness will help them a lot. Once they know, look, you're here and you have help for probably 2 or 3 months. After that, you got to make sure that once those services are gone, you'll be able to stand by yourself so that you're not crushed by the whole process of integration.
That's great. A great point. And for people who are listening and are interested in these services and others, I will post links on the New Mainers Speak website later on. What other services do you think that are needed that aren't currently being offered?
Probably other services are being provided, but not at the capacity of helping them to be able to thrive. And that's something that we've been talking about. So something that's very important that immigrants need to know is learning the language. So English is very crucial in everything that immigrants will be doing. So once they are here, they need to know that they need to learn English, but not just learning so that you'll be able to get around, but you need to learn in the point that is going to help you to compete, like I said, to the higher paying jobs, but also to be able to navigate the system, because language is the key to understanding, and understanding is the key to life. That's how I'll say it, because once you don't understand, life is going to be miserable. But once you understand, you'll be able to grasp things and to be able to navigate around it. And the language is just, I can't emphasize enough how important for the immigrants to learn English. And at the get-go, there's no time to lose. I was talking to my friend the other day, and he told me something that he takes learning English as a personal challenge and something that he cannot go around it. There's no shortcut for that. You got to go into. And I know it can be very challenging, and some people will come and stay in a state of denial because they already grown up, they are speaking 7 languages, like I 7'4", speaking very good French, Swahili, Kinyarwanda, the other languages, and they are in a, they don't feel it's not comfortable zone for them to start again a new language. So, but it's one option. There's no way around.
Get comfortable.
Get comfortable to do it and love it. Yes.
Do you have any ideas about what people who are already here, either established immigrants or other Mainers, might do to help ease people that are newer into the community?
Yeah, there's a lot they can do. They can befriend, talk to them. It's something that we, you know, it helps a lot. You get to learn from them. They learn from you, and you just show them around, like we were saying. But also, this is something that the conference we had about global awareness and responsibility, we're just encouraging people to volunteer in the local organizations that will help immigrants to learn English, computers, and the other skills they need here. Those are very important. So once American people are aware that their need is there for the immigrants, they can engage, they can come and help them and volunteer in different organizations. That's very helpful, and that's something that I think everyone can do if they are willing to do that.
So reach out and meet your neighbor and
yes,
join
definitely.
An organization that you can help
volunteer
support
them.
Their
yes,
mission.
Yeah, yes. 1 hour, 2 hours, there's nothing as a minimum. It's always helpful anytime they can volunteer and help.
And from my perspective, it's a win-win.
It is a win-win, definitely.
Because we know ourselves better when we know someone who's quite different from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And in the end, we're all the kind of same anyway. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. My guest today is Georges Boudagou. He is the author of Ladder to the Moon, a book that shares the life and customs of his people and his childhood in exceedingly rural Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He recently organized a conference called Global Awareness and Responsibility, and today he joins us to talk about the current political landscape and how it affects immigrants in our communities. So, Georges, let's talk about the current division in mainstream America since the recent election. What are you witnessing?
It's a very serious issues that we're experiencing right now. Let me just do a little bit of background. I came here in 2002. In 2004, I participated, or starting in 2003, I was ready. The elections started. I saw the elections between George Bush, President George Bush, and Senator John Kerry then. And I saw the whole process. It was my first time to be here and witness the whole democratic process of elections here. And I was so fascinated with the way everything went smoothly. They discussed about issues, and everything was about the issues and the policies and how one's going to make them better than the other. And once the elections were done, everything was just quiet, and people, I didn't see any fear around who won and who lost. And that one time that I witnessed that. And then in 2008, when President Barack Obama was elected, it was just a phenomenal experience where people saw the hope and the change that was coming. And I think everyone could see that there's a hope for someone like President Obama, just out of probably nowhere and growing to a point of becoming president of the United States, that created a lot of hope in people's lives. And that went after the elections. I didn't see any, to my knowledge, I didn't see people being anxious as to what he's going to do and all that thing. But the last elections, also the other one was in 2012, so it was pretty much the same. But this one, when it started, I saw something that I never seen in the last 14 years. It was the inflammatory languages that were used in the campaign and the fear that was, you know, just into the mainstream America. And that's something that I saw it in the primary elections for the Republicans. But also, it was even elevated into the general elections until when the Donald Trump won the elections. I could see the fear in people's lives, and some probably for the immigrants, particularly, it's because they were afraid that he's gonna send them home or send them back where they came from, despite the atrocity they've gone through. And that's just the fear that you can sense in the community. And that's concerning. And I hope that when after the elections, I was hoping that President-elect Donald Trump will come up with some reconciliatory languages and trying to tell people that, look, this was the campaign is done, and now I'm the president of the United States, and I'm the president for every America. But what I see, I don't see him coming up with, because he knew that there were so many divisions, and it just doesn't take one time to calm people's mind. He has to do repeatedly, as the same way he tweets, he should do it, tweeting about peaceful messages and bringing people together and, giving hope. That's what leaders have to do. It's giving hope to their citizen. So, and that's, I talk to them, I talk to Democrats and Republicans, and I can tell that they are just unsure what's going to happen. And I hope that people, and I was just talking to my friend and said, this is the year that the American institutions are going to be challenged, and I hope they're strong enough to prevail any divisions that will come in the future. So I hope and I pray, I do pray that he will be successful and he will do well and be able to bring people together, because there's a saying in the Bible that say a kingdom that's divided between each other cannot prevail. But so we need unity in this time more than any other time.
Yeah, so we see fear growing around us, mm-hmm. and you've talked about some of your specific concerns around the division. What kinds of things do you suggest people do to help stop the growing culture of fear in our community?
It's something that I've used. I've gone through a lot of things, and I've seen the situation the way I thought I will never survive. But the one thing that helped me is having hope that this situation was also it's going to pass. There's nothing that remains forever. But the other thing is, when a situation is so big and difficult to understand, you have to break it down to a proportion that you can understand and can do easily. So what we need to do, we have to start sending a message of hope and sending the message of peace from where we are. Like I have a family. I have an influence to my kids and my family. So those are the people that I can share every time that I go to school. When my son is bringing some concerning thoughts about, this is going to happen, I always tell, look, you have to be hopeful. You have to be strong. You have to hope that things are going to be good. So sending that message of hope, message of peace in your family, in the close community, and also bigger community. So once people are doing that in every family, it just, so you know that the country is an addition of families. So when we do that in our families, in our friends and relatives, that's how it builds up and it comes to a peaceful nation. That's.
So don't give in to fear.
Don't.
Never. It's scary, it's horrible, and rise up above it.
It doesn't help you for anything. It's a really spiritual fear. It's a horrible thing to have in your life. So you need to combat that at the individual level. It's different from emotions of protection. So those are the things that we need. When you sense that something is not right, you can run, you can do protection. But the fear that prevails in you, it's a horrible feeling, and it's not good, and it's not healthy for you and for the community and for the family. So you have to fight against that.
George, this strikes me as one of those situations where we have a lot to learn from the new people in our communities. You're bringing experience about what do you do when there's fear everywhere.
Yeah.
And your experience tells you, don't give in to it.
Don't. And, let me tell you, this is a country that is strong and rich and blessed in so many different ways. If you read about the greatness of America, you'll be amazed. I read a lot, and I'm always amazed with the wealth and the knowledge and the good people that we have here. And we should protect it. And I hope that America will remain stronger and powerful. And it's now my country. I've seen countries where they break down and they go into despair and miserable life. So we don't want to go there. And we have so many experiences. We cannot afford to lose that sense of dreams and hope and greatness, and just give up to the fear. And for few people who are just polarizing everything, and that's something that we cannot afford. And I hope people understand that way.
Well, it's Martin Luther King Day weekend, and MLK's I Have a Dream speech still has a lot to teach us today. Looking forward, as you consider the political challenges ahead, what's your dream for Maine and for the United States?
I hope that I dream that the United States will remain to be the most powerful country under the sun. But also, I dream that our younger generation will arise above the challenges that we're facing now, and we also rise above the divisions and come up with a country that is diverse but united, and this country that celebrates different cultures and different beliefs and different, you know, skills. So that's my dream, and that also can be applied to men as a state. I dream that Maine will be the most peaceful state, because I know I've gone around and I know Maine is just so peaceful, and I pray that it will remain to be peaceful and embracing the diversity, and also challenging ourselves to innovate and be better than we are now.
Perfectly said. George, you are a passionate person doing everything in your power to make this a healthy community. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Always a pleasure to be here, Kate. And you're doing a fabulous job. I can never thank you enough for all you do and getting to meet different people.
Oh, thank you. It is my joy, my pleasure to do it. Yeah. And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com. And check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest George Budagu. Would you be so kind as to introduce the song you've selected to close today's program?
So the song is called Do Something, and it's by Matthew West. This is a song that he... trying to tell people that he looked around and saw a messy country and asking God, why don't you do something? And God told him that I already done something. I created you. So I equipped you with the possibility of changing things around you. And he always referred to people and say, if not me, then who? If I'm not the one to change the current situation, then who's going to do it? So we have to start. If not now, then when? So we have to start from where we are and know that we have to be the solutions of the problems that we have today. It's a very good song, and I hope you enjoy this.
Thank you. You're so very eloquent.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I woke up this morning, saw a world full of trouble. Now I thought, how do we ever get so far down, and how's it ever gonna turn around? So I turned my eyes to heaven. I thought, God, why don't you do something? Well, I just couldn't bear the thought of people living in poverty, children sold into slavery. The thought disgusted me, so I shook my fist at heaven. I said, God, why don't you do something?
change the world.